Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, what to do about killer asteroids? A Facebook for bacteria. And age reversal in mice. Here's a scientist soundbite.
If this asteroid were to strike the Earth, it would have been catastrophic. The asteroid would have hit with the energy of several thousand megatons of TNT. So this is the kind of asteroid that, you know, that asteroid scientists lose sleep over. I mean, you would not want this asteroid to strike the Earth.
That's Skywatcher and Earth Sky host Deborah Bird talking about killer asteroids. More with her later, but first, Science News of the Week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
On November 8th, a huge asteroid, 2005 YU55, swept closely past the Earth, missing us by only 300,000 kilometers, or 200,000 miles. The large space rock came inside the moon's orbit. The asteroid was about 400 meters, or 1,300 feet wide. It was the largest asteroid ever known to pass so closely to Earth. It caused no harm to the Earth or Moon as it swept past.
On November 7th, a strong area of low pressure brought severe thunderstorms and localized flooding for portions of Texas and Oklahoma. The strongest storms occurred in southwest Oklahoma, where at least one twister was confirmed. No injuries or fatalities were reported, only building damage. But the storm still rattled residents of the state, which had suffered a rare 5.6 magnitude earthquake just the previous weekend.
New research shows that, among wild Chacma baboons of Namibia, the best leaders are sociable types with lots of friends. That's according to European scientists publishing in the journal Animal Behavior in October. They found that when one baboon moves off in search of breakfast, others might follow. But that's if the baboon leading the way is central to the entire group's grooming network. The researchers compared it to an afternoon in the office. When someone popular suggests heading out to happy hour, the whole office goes.
An epic snowstorm began November 8th in northwestern Alaska. It featured hurricane-force winds approaching 100 miles per hour. The storm brought blizzard conditions with zero visibility and a seawater surge of up to 10 feet. Some coastal residents, for example in Nome, Alaska, were advised to evacuate. The National Weather Service at Fairbanks described this storm as being of an epic magnitude rarely experienced. It was said to be the strongest storm to hit Alaska in 40 years.
The European Space Agency announced on November 10th that the Hubble Space Telescope had peered back in time 9 billion years to uncover 69 tiny, young galaxies brimming with stars in the process of formation. Astronomers say these galaxies are churning out stars at such a fast rate that the number of stars in them could double in just 10 million years, a short time on the cosmic scale. By comparison, our home galaxy, the Milky Way, has taken 1,000 times longer to double its number of stars. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. We've got some cool science interviews coming up, but first, our song of the week. Austin-based musician John Parfit creates electropop music under the name Bright Lights. He's got a new album out, and here's a track from it.
You gonna do now? If you can't let go.
We'd love to hear from you on Facebook, and now on Google+. Tell us where you're from. You can find us as Earth Sky. Deborah Bird joins us to talk about the global night sky and people's reactions to events like the close approach of asteroid 2005 YU-55, an asteroid which swept closely past Earth on November 8th. Welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Jorge. Thank you. This asteroid passed between the moon's orbit and the Earth, so it was very close to Earth. In fact, it's a large asteroid, and it's the closest asteroid, the closest large asteroid to Earth since 1976. So this really was, on November 8th, a very big event.
Wow. You know, we just got a question from Twitter. Allison H. asks, if this asteroid did hit Earth, would it be catastrophic? All we hear is disaster stories about Earth versus meteor.
Well, in fact, Jorge, if this asteroid were to strike the Earth, it would have been catastrophic. The asteroid would have hit with the energy of several thousand megatons of TNT. So this is the kind of asteroid that, you know, that asteroid scientists lose sleep over. I mean, you would not want this asteroid to strike the Earth. But in fact, they've known about this asteroid since 2005, its name, 2005 YU-55. And its orbit is very well tracked, very well known, and there was never a possibility that it was going to strike the Earth. So what I find so interesting is people's reaction to this asteroid.
Yeah, tell us more about what you've seen in the progressions of people's questions about this asteroid, their fears. What have you seen?
Well, I mean, I think it's a phenomenon that's going on nowadays with respect to natural events like asteroids and comets and so on, because not a month ago, there was another object, Comet Elenin, that people were terrified of. And people were saying things like, it's going to pass between the Earth and the Sun, and it's going to cause 3 days of darkness and, you know, scared to death of Comet Elenin. Of course, nothing happened. In fact, Comet Elenin disintegrated when it got close to the Sun. So nothing happened there. And then very gradually, over a period of several weeks, the attention shifted to this new object, 2005 YU-55, which passed on November 8th. And, you know, people started out on our website saying things like, is it going to strike the Earth? No, it's not going to strike the Earth. Okay, well, is it going to strike the Moon? No, it's not going to strike the Moon. Well, are there other objects traveling with it that could strike the Earth? No, there are no other objects traveling with it. And it's like every time we tried to say it's okay and it's going to be okay, you know, people tried to come up with a reason why it wasn't okay. And in fact, by the day of the event, the day of the passage, people were angry at us for coming down on the side of that it's going to be okay and that, you know, it's not going to strike the Earth. And, you know, I find that an amazing phenomenon.
Well, right. This whole idea that there could be some cover up of information that this asteroid will strike the Earth. I mean, it does seem kind of ludicrous, doesn't it?
It seems kind of ludicrous. And, you know, I've been doing this work for 35 years, and it used to be that there would be 10 years or so between doomsday stories, in astronomy at least. I mean, the first one that I remember was in 1986, when the idea was that all the planets were supposed to be lining up on one side of the Sun, and it was going to cause earthquakes and so on and so on. And of course, it didn't cause any earthquakes. Nothing happened. You know, after that, it seemed, after the turn of the 21st century, it seemed that we would get a doomsday story every few years. But now it seems like we're getting the doomsday stories every few weeks.
Well, Deborah, what are the chances that a killer asteroid will strike Earth?
Well, in fact, Jorge, you know, 30 years ago, astronomers were just beginning to realize that that was a real possibility. So indeed, in the 1970s and 80s, astronomers were concerned about this, and they began to organize themselves into these operations such as Space Watch, which is based in Arizona. And Space Watch is the organization that discovered asteroid 2005 YU-55. It was inevitable when astronomers began looking for asteroids that crossed the path of Earth, what they called near-Earth asteroids or potentially hazardous asteroids. It was inevitable that when they started looking for them, that they would find some. And in fact, that's what's happened with 2005 YU-55. And it's probably passed close to Earth before, but we just didn't know about it. But what's different now is that we have astronomers actually looking with telescopes and trying to find these things. And at this point, there are no asteroids, there are no comets known for a fact to be on a collision course with Earth. Now, there are objects that astronomers are watching. One of the things that I found so amazing about this event was that people were saying, NASA isn't telling us the truth. The government is lying about this asteroid. It really is going to strike, but they aren't telling us. And, you know, I just find that so amazing because why wouldn't they tell us?
It doesn't make much sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. So at any rate, I'm not scared. I've been someone who my whole adult life, you know, watching the skies myself and reading about it and talking to astronomers about it. And I have no fear of asteroids or comets striking the Earth in my lifetime. So, I hope people will, you know, take that off their list of things to be afraid of.
Yeah, I feel better just talking about it with you.
Thanks, Jorge.
Thanks, Deborah. Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science.
I'd say first and foremost, we want to understand how is it that these very aged tissues retain this capacity to almost completely rejuvenate themselves.
You're listening to Robert DePigno at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. He led a promising scientific study that, in a sense, turned back the clock on mice and reversed signs of their aging. Dr. DePigno engineered mice with a gene that can be switched on and off to control an enzyme called telomerase. Telomerase builds telomeres, a kind of cap that protects the end of chromosomes, the stuff in cells that pass on genetic traits. Telomerase was switched off and the mice prematurely aged. It was later switched on and they reverted back to their younger selves. Dr. DePigno is on the line now to explain his findings. Welcome to the program, Dr. DePigno.
Pleasure to be here.
Now tell us about the main results of your study that looked at a way to reverse the aging process of mice.
Well, the most important lesson that we learned from this study is that aged tissues, even when one's in an advanced state of degeneration, retain a remarkable capacity to renew themselves. Essentially, what we did in this study was to engineer mice with a inducible telomerase gene. Telomerase is a special enzyme that helps to maintain the tips of our chromosomes, so-called telomeres. As we age, we incur damage at the telomeres. We accumulate damage as well as the telomeres become eroded. And over the course of time, that signals to the cell to enter an aged state. And essentially, by being able to regulate the enzyme that can restore those telomeres, we're in a position to ask, what happens when we toggle this gene on and off? In the off state, these animals aged prematurely. They had shrunken brains, impaired myelination, which is very typical of that which occurs in human brains. That is the sheaths that surround the neurons, so the neurons don't work as well. They have impaired cognition, decreased stem cells throughout their body in a variety of different organ systems. So we see organ atrophy, gray hair, dermatitis, and these mice were infertile. So in this state of severe degeneration, which I would peg the equivalent to be in somebody in their eighth or ninth decade of life, we turned the gene back on. And we found that that repaired the telomeres. And we were expecting perhaps a slowing or a stabilization of the aging process. And instead, we witnessed a dramatic reversal in the signs and symptoms of aging. So the brains increased in size, cognition improved, the coat hair was restored to a healthy sheen, and fertility was restored. So this teaches us that there's a point of return for these tissues if you remove the underlying cause, which in this case was excessive DNA damage at the tips of our chromosomes.
That was Robert DiPigno at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. This is Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. Research led by microbiologist Eric Alm of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology has found evidence of a massive network that connects bacteria from all around the world. In some ways, it's sort of like a Facebook for bacteria that allows them to exchange genes. Alm and co-authors published their results in late 2011 in the journal Nature. On the line now is Eric Alm to tell us what he found. Welcome, Dr. Alm.
Thank you.
What are the main findings of the work you've co-authored in the journal Nature on a worldwide network used by bacteria to pass genetic information?
Well, the big surprise was not that bacteria can pass information back and forth between each other, but the big surprise was that when we looked into the genomes of the bacteria that have been sequenced, we found that most of the bacteria we found exchanging DNA had actually been isolated from the human body. Not the same human body, but different people, separated typically by about 4,000 miles. And occasionally we found that bacteria in livestock or on human food actually shared DNA with the bacteria in our bodies. So the network really extends beyond just bacteria living directly on humans.
So how do bacteria exchange information over thousands of miles?
Well, we don't know exactly when the exchanges happened. That's some of the research that we're looking into right now. All we know is that the DNA that we found in both of the organisms was nearly 100% identical. So the exchange must have happened recently enough that the genes didn't have time to accumulate any mutations. The way that humans can fly around the globe nowadays, and as connected as we are, maybe it's not surprising that these bacteria and their genes are able to transfer just as broadly as the humans that they inhabit.
Would you compare this to a Facebook for bacteria, and why so?
Right. Well, the web analogy is a good one because DNA is genetic information. I might actually make the comparison to MySpace because there's some pretty creepy bacteria out there. And, you know, you're really just as likely to get a virus as any useful information by connecting up to that global network.
Would you explain to us kind of how you found it? What's the evidence for this connection?
Right. Well, we looked in the databases of bacterial genomes that have been sequenced. And what we asked was a very simple question. When we compare the genomes of completely, bacteria from completely different species, do we ever find 100% identical DNA? That should never happen because, these are bacteria from different species, so if they shared a common gene, mutations would have happened in that gene, and it should no longer be 100% identical in bacteria that have been diverged for hundreds of millions of years. So what we did is we sifted through all of the genomes that have been sequenced, and we said, when do we find 100% identical DNA into very different species? And when we find it, then we conclude the DNA has been transferred, maybe not from one to the other, but more likely transferred from a global pool of DNA very recently into both of them. So they both, drew an identical copy from this global pool. And we don't know exactly where this DNA is being stored. A lot of it is probably coming in on viruses, or it could be coming in from dead cells in the environment. There's a number of ways that places the DNA can come from. But we know that bacteria are tapping into this this global pool by use of things like viruses and things like that.
You've been listening to microbiologist Eric Alm of MIT. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Bright Lights, Okote Soul Sounds, Sleep Good, 100 Flowers, and The Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much hype, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age.